You're listening to Bigfoot, Ground Zero, the science behind the sighting. To contact the show, email BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com.
Ground Zero. My name is Dave. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, call us at 855-410-0672. Just leave us a message and your contact information and we'll get back to you. Love to hear your story, maybe even get you on the air. I have invited a good friend of mine, Chris Spencer, from the Olympic Project. He does research up in the Pacific Northwest in the state of Washington. And he's got a couple of research areas that we are not going to discuss today, but we are going to discuss an overnight expedition that he did with some friends in Washington. And a very interesting series of events happened around the campfire. And he wants to get into that and explain the series of events because they're very interesting in relation to what he thinks are the target subjects around the campfire, potentially watching them. And that's something that researchers think that Sasquatch do. They like to observe people in what might appear their natural interaction around a campfire, just being quote-unquote stupid campers. A lot of experiences come from this. When you're out looking for Sasquatch, it's really different. But what we're finding is it's potentially easier to bring them in to see you based on your activity. So let's go ahead with the interview. I'll interview Chris Spencer, and we will see you on the other end. Again, this is Bigfoot Ground Zero. So we were talking about Dr. Meldrum's presentation on Bigfoot, and it's the Patty sighting from years ago, and he pulls out so much information, you know, muscle movement, ligament. He talks about the hands, the way the fingers are curled. You can see the teeth bared, the way chimps do or great apes do when they feel threatened. But what seals that deal for me, Chris, is somebody walking in a suit on a dry lake bed with sticks and rocks and everything in there. That thing walks so smoothly, but then it whips his head forward with purpose. You know, you can't, at the end of that, if you look at it, it looks from right to center so quickly, like it was second nature, that if somebody was in a suit, they wouldn't be doing that. They'd be looking at the ground, they'd be moving the head slowly so they didn't trip on anything. But I don't know, this is a side conversation to what we're having. But
Krantz actually talked about that movement when I was in school and the way she moves her head, so... It's definitely a creature very adapted to its surroundings.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people say that, you know, you can't look at the Patty film. You know, if I talk about Sasquatch, a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, that grainy film that we used to see on, you know, when Leonard Nimoy in Search of would talk about it, you know, back in the late 70s. And, I mean, you can't blame him because the film is... it's faster than the normal gait of a great ape. And, you know, people have seen it maybe once or twice. They don't clue into the things like the breasts and, you know, all of that stuff. So if you're going to hoax something, I certainly wouldn't think to put breasts on it, you know? So I didn't mean to get us off topic. I wanted to talk about the research that you are doing. So you head up the Tootle River Valley Skookum research group. I know you have a YouTube page. So, you know, if you're listening, feel free to go to Chris's YouTube page. Again, it's Tootle River Valley Skookum. That's the name of the research group. Chris, you are also a member of the Olympic Project. And there are a lot of folks who don't know either maybe who your organization is that you head up or a lot about the OP Project or Olympic Project. Why don't you give us just a kind of a quick background on your organization and then your time with the OP, and then we'll kind of get into the research that you're doing and then talk about a specific field audio report between December 5th and December 6th.
Okay, so Tudor River Valley, that's just the Facebook name I gave to my private page.
Yeah, that's all right.
My stuff. I don't consider myself an organization, but I just gave that name to my YouTube because that's the area I'm going to, Tudor River Valley. Basically, it consists of me and my fiance Rebecca now, and Gerald Mills. He joined me in 2015 and 16 doing a lot of game camera work and plot watcher work. I think at one point he had over a dozen different cameras in one specific area. But yeah, so I started researching in Tootle in 2015. The spring of 2015, shortly after I started recording, I went on an OP Olympic Project expedition where I got to meet Shane and Derek and David Ellis in person. And after that, I corresponded with David Ellis quite a bit. I still correspond with David when I have questions. He's basically where I've learned to do my audio analysis and vetting things and using Spectrogram. So I evidently, you know, me and Shane, we started talking a lot. We've since then done a lot of camping together, and I've been absorbed into the OP. So,
yeah, that's thanks for the background. I wanted to, you know, get that out of the way so people can kind of understand, you know, who you are and where you're coming from. And also, if you're listening right now, I'm going to post Chris's field reports here shortly after the show. So you'll be able to go on BigfootGroundZero.com and look at his field reports. And I'll also post the visual of the sounds that you're going to hear. And that's really important. It's through a program called Sonic Visualizer. Go out and download that program. It'll make a lot more sense as to what we're talking about. Again, we're kind of going for the science behind the sighting. So, Chris, why don't you just line us up and tell us what Sonic Visualizer is and how you use it in the field?
It's a free program you can download from the internet. And basically, it takes any sound you capture with your recorder and turns it into a picture. And by doing that, each sound has a specific signature. And when you go into an area and record for a amount of time, you start to recognize the different signatures in that area. And by looking at it visually, I can compare certain signatures to known things and things pop up that we don't know. Basically, I hear things differently than you do. Everybody is not going to hear the same. So you get around that by making a picture of it and having that signature up there. We can both listen to a sound. We might hear something different, but we can both visually see that signature and say, well, that does not look like a barred owl, or that does not look like a coyote. I've come to find that even our target subjects, they don't sound anything like a coyote.
Yeah, it's weird. You look at the what we consider to be the target subjects, and you're talking about Sasquatch, is these sounds that they make, howls, any vocals, they show up in a different frequency on Sonic Visualizer. So just in essence, and I know it's really hard to describe a visual on a podcast, but Sonic Visualizer will show you, I mean, it'll be a marked difference between, say, a tree knock or rock knock and a gunshot, or vocalizations humans have at a certain frequency, a certain hertz, and then Sasquatch will have typically at a much lower hertz. We don't know why. I mean, it could be the chest cavity is so huge or whatever the case is, but am I right in describing that?
Yeah, for the most part. I've actually found, you know, the target subjects seem to have a hertz level that's comparable to humans, whereas, because my biggest nemesis is canine. We have a lot of coyotes out here where I record, and I actually have a lot of people send me coyote clips asking me to check it out for them, and the coyotes may start out down around our level, but they always go way higher than human, and it's pretty identifiable right away. But as far as our target subjects go, they at somewhere between that 600 and 700 hertz range seems to be a sweet spot for them. And whereas like mine, I've recorded myself, I've recorded you, I've recorded a bunch of people in the field, and our hertz levels are usually 700, 800 hertz. And so there's definitely a sweet spot.
Nice. And you know, it's weird because when you're out there and you've done this for a long time, and I've been recording a little bit too, it's you just know intuitively when something doesn't fit. But yeah, you also, I think David Ellis says it the best: never trust your ears. Always look at what you're seeing, and then you'll know if it's something out of the ordinary. All right, so go ahead and line us up. We're talking about the field report and the activity and the research that you did overnight, December 5th through December 6th. And I'm going to go ahead and pinpoint the exact location where it was. It was in Washington. That's humor, Chris.
I was going to say, what are you doing, Dave? Are you freaking nuts?
You know, it's funny. My first podcast years ago, it was something about a sighting at Betty's Neck here in New Hampshire, or here in Massachusetts. And I just had my first podcast. I didn't know. And people listened to that, and they descended upon the place. There was like five or six people that were emailing me. So, yeah, I mean, if you start going out in the woods and doing this stuff, just be careful. One, safety always, but two is just be careful what you broadcast or put online, because people will go ahead and do that. Now, I keep teasing this, but I'm gonna be quiet, and I'm gonna let you line up what it is you guys did, and then we can get into the recordings and, you know, recorder placement and all that.
Okay, so early December, me and Shane Corson, my fiance Rebecca Slick, we just went up for a one night camp in this new area, and I had placed a long-term recording unit back in October, I believe, beginning of October. The area is interesting because you were out here and you were camping with Shane Corson, Todd Hale, and my fiance Rebecca, Jonathan Brown, and several other people, and you guys had some interesting experiences. So I had come out after that and placed a long-term recording unit. And essentially, my long-term recording units have a time record function. And, you know, depending on the weather, battery, anywhere from 16 nights to 26 nights is what I get. So I had one of those out there. I knew the battery was dead. And me and Shane and Rebecca decided, let's go get it and just camp out for one night. So we got out there. I placed three different audio recorders out, placed a game camera, and picked up the recorder, the long-term unit, and then we just proceeded to camp. And something weird happened.
Well, it's interesting. Let's take a step back, because you say camping. A lot of people think research. Talk about what you mean by that and why you do that sort of behavior.
Well, what I have found, and Shane agrees with me because this is what Shane's found in our experiences, most times that we believe the target subjects have gotten close to us is when we're just sitting around a fire talking and laughing. I would say 90% of my suspect audio that I get when I go camping occurs when we're just all around the fire BSing and being oblivious to anything around us.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Some of the sounds that you get are sounds that are happening during that. And again, thank God for Sonic Visualizer, because you can see those things that you don't normally pick up by ear. When do the sounds typically occur? Is it typically when you guys are talking and doing your thing, or is it a lull, you know? Because I feel like these things know when you're talking, they can move and they can do things that they normally would get, you know, quote-unquote busted for.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt in my mind they use noise to mask their noise. Even like hunters do it. I do it when I'm hunting and stuff. When there's a big noise of whatever, whether it's walking by a creek or a stream, I'm using that noise to mask my own noise. And definitely that's we can talk about recorder placement. That's why I have multiple recorders out, and that's why I have them at different distances from our actual camp, because almost all the noise that's suspect occurs while we're laughing and being really loud.
So talk us through that. I mean to interrupt, but this is a good point to get into. Talk about recorder placement in relation to where you are. Is it literally like triangular and you put it all around, you know, your center point of where the fire is, or how does that work?
Basically, it depends on how many recorders I have. Normally I have at least three recorders with me, and I will have a recorder about 30 yards from us. And then I'll go out, and that'll be in one direction. I usually go north, south, east, and west. So I'll have, depending on the geography, how where camp's at, you know, where the high ground is and stuff, I will have a recorder about 30 yards out, and then I'll have a recorder, you know, 50, 60 yards out. And then usually I put a recorder over 100 yards out. And that way I actually have gotten recorded sound that occurred closer to our 30 yard recorder. But because we were talking, we stepped on it. My 50, 60 yard recorder picked it up way clearer because it was further from us.
Interesting. So, you would have thought, the closest one would have picked up the sound better. So what you're saying is, it the sound becomes more clear sometimes the further away you get from camp.
Yeah, it's just for so you can hear it. It comes in just as strong at that 30 yard recorder that's close to us, but we step on it, so you don't actually hear it as well. But that one that's a little further away, because the whatever's making that sound is actually further away than us. And then in relation to the 30-yard recorder, it's going to pick it up from that more distant recorder a little better.
All right, clear. So let's talk about time in the recording, because I'm looking at this field report right now, and I'm noticing things start at about 5 p.m., then they go all the way to 7 a.m., where you hear some things. We'll talk about this power knock and some of these other things that happen, but you know, what's the sweet spot for squatching? I mean, everybody I talk to, it's a little bit different, but you're doing it. So let me know.
Well, you could talk to Squatcher Matrix about specific data points and the percentages for a specific time. But dusk and dawn are my favorite sweet spots for getting target subject activity. That first in this particular report, that first suspect vocalization occurred right at dark. It was in December, so right about 5 p.m. it was dark. I mean, it was dark by 4:45. But honestly, they can be random, dude. I've gotten stuff in the middle of the day, and I've gotten stuff in the middle of the night. But really, dusk and dawn are hours that I really pay attention to. In Tootle specifically, right at dusk is a time when I've gotten the whistles, the howls, percussives. That's in that area, and it could change. I mean, these things are not they're not static. They do whatever they want when they want. And one area there might be more activity at 10 o'clock at night versus 9 o'clock versus midnight, whatever. So I look specifically at dusk and dawn or hot hours. And of course there's kind of a sweet spot there between 1 and 4 AM. That's when they're 3 AM, I guess, is a hot spot time.
But you've recorded sounds 1 year or one season that you haven't gotten for, you know, the next year. It's like they almost don't come back.
Oh yeah. And X1, for sure. 2015, there was a lot of different suspect sounds recorded. I had some personal experiences where I'm pretty sure I got close to our target subjects. But 2015 specifically, there was a lot of whistles. I recorded a lot of whistles and didn't really record any that I can think of off the top of my head in 16 or 17. But 2018 rolls around, and in June, our whistler, and it's the same individual who's whistling in 2015, starts whistling again in June of 2018. X1 has always been an area that I know they pass through and sometimes spend a little time in, but it's not an area they are at all the time. And there's been hot years and years where I've gotten nothing. I mean, I usually get something, but there's some years I get more than others. They're just passing through.
You know, I think about that. And guys, I know about this with Chris because he gets real cranky when he goes out and goes out and picks up audio and there's not anything there for 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months. But I mean, that's research, right? You got to go out there and get what you get. But so coming back to the experience here, there are four specific sounds that you wanted to highlight. A couple of them are a little bit hard to pick up, but you can find them. Again, I'll post those at BigfootGroundZero.com, and Chris, you know, you'll be the highlighted researcher on this. You'll see the visuals, and you'll get the description of what's going on. But so you've got a couple of things. You know, in the first experience, it looks like 5:10 p.m. There is what might be called a rock bang, but that was actually a rock exploding next to the fire. But you do hear vocals while you guys are talking. And again, you didn't pick up on this at the time, at least from the audio that I heard.
No, we didn't hear it at all. We had, we got up there, we got to the camp area right about 4:00. So we kind of rushed to get camp set up because it got dark quick and got a fire going. But this it's a vocalization. It's distant. And we suspect that it came from a certain area, and it's visually you can barely see it, and I can barely hear it. This is one of those cases where you're using your eyes and your ears when you're reviewing it. And the only reason I kind of picked up on it is because it's pretty much the same kind of vocalization that you guys picked up in late August when you had your trip up there. The one you guys got, it was way more impressive. Kirk Brandenburg recorded it, and it was closer. This one's distant, but it's definitely got that same kind of signature and that tone. I mean, it's definitely the same individual that's making the noise.
All right, we're going to go ahead and play that right now, and I'll loop it a couple of times. I'm going to crank the volume up. Bear with us because there's sure an awful lot of ambient noise there, but you should be able to hear the vocalization while they're talking. So let's go ahead and cue that up. Yeah, as we're listening to that, certainly you guys didn't hear that, but it was good that you picked that up on visual and you were able to look back at that. But it seems like the behavior ramped up a little bit from what I can see and what I've heard from the audio. So now I want to go down a little bit about the timeline a little further to a little after 7:00, and you've had the vocalization. You didn't hear this, but you picked up a sound that definitely is a branch breaking under a footstep. What leads you to believe that this might be the target subject, maybe even moving closer or just in general?
It was really close. We heard it, and it was definitely, I've looked at it over and over now, and even since I made that report. And the general consensus, both Shane and I and Todd agree, there's a percussive there. It's like, whatever did this got close to us, smacked a tree real hard, and then took off. It sounds like a huge branch or small tree coming down. And it was within, you know, that 30-yard range of us. It got right up on us and kind of scared the bejeebers out of us.
Yeah, I'm sure it's dark and you guys are sitting there doing your thing. That's the thing with this, you know, as much as you've been out there and you know, you've got nerves of steel, when something happens that close, it definitely rattles you.
I was just going to say, it, whatever did it really close to the recorder. It made no sound coming in close to us. And then just, it was done on purpose. And I think it was done in disgust to let us know that it was there. Honestly, it was aggressive.
And you're in an area that's, you know, there's been experiences like this before where the target subjects will actually vocalize very closely and get a little bit aggressive. I'm going to play next week on next week's show, and I'll probably have Shane come on and talk about it. But we had a tree fall very close to camp. When we did certain things, we were actually bedding down to go to sleep for the night. But yeah, that was really interesting. The foot stepping on whatever it is, and then we'll go from there. So. All right, so let's fast forward to 2:50 a.m. To me, the icing on the cake, and I love this, is this power strike. Talk about what a power strike is as compared to a knock. Is it the close proximity, or what is that? How do you describe that?
Well, some people call them power knocks. I've taken to calling them power strikes because that's what David Ellis calls them, and that's more descriptive, I think. It's a definite, deliberate percussive that's created with more force than I could create, that anybody I know can create. And it's almost, I've had it happen to me, and we had it, the two of us, yeah, in person a number of times, and it scares the bejeebers out of you and make you jump. It's almost as loud as a gunshot. I suspect they're doing it as just to tell everybody in the area I'm here. And a lot of times I've had it happen in X1 actually, where it's been definitely related to me coming in the area and I disturbed them in some way or another, and they didn't like that I was there.
It's almost like they're saying, I'm here and I know you're here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always that's comforting. Pretty good.
So, yeah. So talk about this. So we're going to line this up, 2:50 AM. Now, were you asleep at this point? I know the last sound clip we're going to play, Shane and Rebecca were awake and heard what was going on. But were you awake at this time, or is this something you found later?
No. So after we had whatever got close to us let us know that it was there, we kind of paused. But it's not the first time we've had something like this happen. So we started up our conversation again, made dinner, and talked and tried to just continue to act normal. And I personally, I'm totally chicken in the woods. After my experience in 2013, it's a struggle sleeping in a tent for me. So I like to go to bed before everybody else so I can fall asleep to everybody else talking in the fire. And so I hit the hay really early, probably 11 o'clock. Rebecca and Shane stayed up therming. That was the other thing. Whatever got close to us, it made that noise, and by the time Shane got his thermal out and I got my thermal out, it had made its exit. So, unfortunately, we didn't get any view of it. But so we knew the target subjects were in the area at that point, and so we had our therms out. Rebecca, I gave her mine, and Shane had his, and they were doing some therming, and they stayed up talking and therming till I want to say 12:30 or so. And I was out. I was so tired. I slept really well through the night, and I didn't wake up till about 3:30, and I woke up to Rebecca with a death grip on my leg and telling me to shh, because I guess I was rolling around or something. And of course I had to go pee, and so I couldn't get out of the tent. And now I'm getting irritated, and she's just squeezing on my leg. Be quiet. There's something outside the tent. Yeah, there you go. But
now I'm looking at your timeline here. That's when that tapper occurred. And we're going to play that too, the multiple taps. But let's go to the power strike. I want to play that, and then we'll come back at the end. Thank you. All right. So that was the power strike looped a couple of times. Now, I've heard these a couple of times when I've been out in the woods. Like Chris, you talked about, there was one when you and I were out together, and that was about a year or so ago. You know, to me,
longer than that.
Was it longer than that?
Yeah, that was 2017.
Good Lord. Time flies. Time flies when you're having fun, right? So yeah, I mean, those power knocks are just really weird. It's like, what was funny is in that scenario, you and I thought it was somebody else. You and I thought it was Shane, like setting up recorders and then making sounds. And he comes back and we realized quickly between the three of us that he'd not done anything. And by the way, if it was anybody but Shane, I would just say, okay, somebody's screwing around. Because they weren't, you know, the protocol is stay together so you don't, you know, confuse sounds and that sort of thing. But man, when he came back, you and I were shooting the breeze on a rock in camp. And all of a sudden we realized, like, holy cow, this power knock was close, you know?
Well, yeah. And I remember when it happened, I remember commenting to you, boy, that's a really good knock.
Right. We thought for sure that was Shane, but as it turned out, it wasn't. And so that was really an interesting experience. We've played some of the sounds. We've got the vocalization. We've got the footstep close to camp, and I've listened to that, and I don't think that would be an elk, because I've heard elk step and run away, and they make a lot of noise when they move. And also, they tend not to move that far. I think you would have seen that on the thermal. And then the power strike comes, and so this is all sequential. But then what's really interesting is what you term as this tapper, right? And this is what you know Rebecca woke you up for and told you to be quiet, and she heard it. Talk about, you set this up so when I go into the sound here shortly, you know, people can have a reference for this.
So I was obviously asleep and I heard nothing. The power knock occurs around 2:50 a.m. and both Rebecca and Shane were woken by that. They didn't know what they were woken by, but something woke them both up. So they were on high alert, and our tents were close enough. Shane had unzipped his door. Rebecca had her door unzipped, and they were kind of whispering back and forth. But around, I think it was 3:20 or so, that's when the tapper occurs. And basically, it just sounds like a little kid, you know, whacking the fence post as he's walking along with a stick. But this is obviously in the woods. It just, something with purpose, fairly close to us. I have an idea based upon where my recorders are placed, where it occurred. And it was fairly close to us. And it was just like this thing came in close again now that the fire was out and we were in our tents, and just did this tapping on the trees.
Yeah, it's so weird. When you listen to this sound, and again, we'll cue it up and we'll loop it here in a minute, is when you think about these power strikes and you think about, like, you've captured some things in X1, and we'll talk about this on another show. You know, I remember succinctly that there was a file that you sent me, and it sounded like a bunch of apes sitting around knocking sticks and doing things. And, you know, we know this from chimp and great ape behavior. But think about this, you know, if you're out there listening and you think, oh, these are, you know, elk clashing together or something just bumping into trees, you have to actually pick up a stick and hit it against a tree, or a rock and hit it against a tree. And I don't know something out there with opposable thumbs other than humans. And when you are that far out and you're so remote and there's other people not camping in this area, I mean, do you think it could be anything else, Chris? Because I can't figure that out.
Well, another thing I want to point out, when our target subjects make a sound, they make that sound, and then usually there's nothing after it for a while. These sounds always occur out of nowhere. It's like the sound at 7-Eleven. We didn't hear anything move up. The recorder did not pick up anything moving in close to us. And then all of a sudden, there's this explosion of sound, and then nothing. In X1, that's happened over and over. ApeFit, perfect example. Hours of dead silence, and out of nowhere, this fit. And then hours of dead silence. So, you know, I've always said, these things don't make noise unless they're really agitated, and they do it with purpose, and then they go stealth quiet again. And so ungulates make a lot of noise. Deer and elk, when they're moving through the woods, they don't just make one noise and go quiet. And this tapir's the same situation. There's nothing before it, and then there's really nothing after it. It's like it decided to make some noise. I think what it was doing was just seeing if we were awake, because Rebecca and Shane were awake, but their tents were still zipped up at that time. I think they unzipped their tents. I think Shane actually got out of his tent when he heard the tapper and tried to therm. But, you know, he gets out of the tent. Whatever was out there saw him get out of the tent, and guess what? Nothing else happens. So,
yeah, it was interesting. I was talking to Bart Catino, and I'm going to have him on an interview here in a couple of weeks. And the behavior of these things is interesting, because he happened to therm one, and it, when it got close to the fire, just got down on all fours, very low, right? Mm-hmm. And what he talks about is these things, you know, he couldn't figure out why it had the hand up. And they realized after the fact that it was shielding the fire from their eyes so they could see everything around. And it doesn't surprise me that we don't get these things necessarily on therm. You know, it's tough. If things drop down, and this is what people don't realize, you know, if things drop down into the brush, it's still really hard to get that on therm, because it can look like anything else. You know, it could look like a rock. It could look like the rest of the...
What's interesting, you know, I've got a cheap therm, but I've used it a lot, and I've been fortunate enough to use Shane's and other people's a lot. When we're like where we are at this time, we're in the middle of the forest, and there's all these trees, there's dead logs, and there's rise and hills here and there. It would take nothing to just drop down low, and you'd be completely hidden from a therm. It's therming is a great idea, but if there's anything in front of your target, you're not going to see it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, what people don't realize is it shows up as, you know, colored, you know, like a green or yellow, and then there's black around. But yeah, I mean, that's as good as it gets. Whereas an elk or a bear or something, they just lumber along, and you can see, you know, there's not the intelligence there. And sure, you know, other animals are not trying to get into this, but to get in close and trying to take a look at you, they want to back out and get away. But let's listen to the sound of the tapper. We'll talk about that, and then we'll kind of wrap things up. We'll just give a, you know, a quick wrap up of what we heard, and we'll go from there. All right, so that was the tapper, and again, you know, listen to this certainly with skepticism, but also, you know, listen to this with the realization that this is tapping with a purpose. Obviously, something had to pick it up, pick the stick up or the rock, and just tap along. Which begs the question, Chris: how do you know if it's a rock or a stick that's being that's going against a tree or whatever the case is?
Oh, I've done some knocking experiments where I've taken rocks out at 30-yard increments and banged on trees, 30-yard increments from my recorder, banged on trees with a big branch, or actually a baseball bat, rocks. I've done rock on rock. And there's not a lot of difference in the signatures, but there's a cadence to the knock. And with all the reports, there's a lot of rock throwing out there, and it just makes more sense to me that they're utilizing a rock because they can, that's easier to carry around than a branch, and you know, potentially they could throw it and kill something with it. I suspect they're using rocks more often than not. And a lot of the wood out in the woods, yeah, you can find some good sticks for knocking and stuff, but a lot of it's rotten and dead. And I mean, a lot of percussive also, I think, is just big branches being broke. Over the last five years, I've come to believe that they're using rocks more often than not. I've had rocks thrown at me, by the way. So that's just my own personal thoughts on it. You know, other people could think differently. It's just a hypothesis.
All right. Again, you've been listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. Until next time, over and out.